Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good news, bad news, crazy news for conservatives. And Jim, this is not exactly getting a full martini today, just a quick mention at the beginning. But tonight, of course, is the one and only vice presidential debate. Looks like most of the Martha Raddatz stuff has blown over. So unless her first question to Paul Ryan is, why wasn't Mitt Romney at my wedding? I think we can pretty much put that one to bed. I think if you're Paul Ryan, it sounds like he's studied and prepared himself as well as possible. The problem with debating Joe Biden, though, is he could make up anything over an hour and a half, and you have to be ready for that. So good luck, Paul.
Yeah, so Jim Panakakis had recounted a recent cable TV appearance with Howard Dean, and he said sometimes debating a spectacularly misinformed opponent is even harder than debating one who knows something because you just don't know where to start. You know, when everything they say is wrong and you only got a certain amount of time to correct everything they say. Now, by and large, I think Ryan just has to be himself tonight. The one thing I did say earlier was that Ryan does look very young. He's 42 years old, and I think he looks even younger. And so for all the senior citizens watching out there saying, who is this kid? I'd kind of focus on just coming across as a guy who's ready to be president if, God forbid, he had to. I think that might be the one kind of nagging doubt some voters might have about Paul Ryan. I think otherwise he knows these subjects backwards and forwards. If I were advising Joe Biden, and obviously I'm not, I would tell Joe Biden to actually not – I don't know if the attack dog mentality is going to work well for him. I think my advice to Biden would be first, do no harm. I don't think the Obama campaign wants to have Joe Biden out there convinced he has to save the campaign, swinging for the fences every single time. That's how I think Biden gets himself in trouble. He'll start telling anecdotes of things that didn't happen and citing foreign policy conflicts that only happened in alternate realities. I think Ryan will have, you know, is well informed enough to be able to say, Mr. Vice President, I have no idea what you're talking about, and nobody in this room has any idea what you're talking about either. Although I got to say, I like the suggestion I saw on Twitter earlier that the most devastating tool in Paul Ryan's toolbox for tonight is, no, that's fine, Mr. Vice President. Please go on.
Best line I heard from a Republican yesterday was, Joe Biden at a debate is like going to a NASCAR race. You just sit there and wait for the wreck. So,
yeah, I mean, now it's worth noting, we think of Biden as this, you know, semi-lovable goofball who never has any idea of what's going on around him and is asking people in wheelchairs to stand up and all these other things. My guess is that Biden, you know, he can get it together and be more competent and even keeled. And he kind of saw that in the last vice presidential debate. So I don't think we'll get classic Bidenisms. I do hear the over-under on literalies is 20, though. So I'm taking the over. Oh, I think you should at least 20 literallys and maybe literally 21. You
know? Definitely take the over on that. And here's a prediction. Paul Ryan will not walk on stage and say, can I call you Joe? I'm pretty sure that won't be how he starts. But anyway, on to our good martini now. And we've talked a lot about polls this week. And why not? We just talked yesterday about how the Real Clear Politics average favors Mitt Romney for the first time in this campaign. Now we're seeing some of these critical battleground state polls getting tighter and tighter. Some of them still favor the president, but not by nearly as much as they did. There are now polls showing Romney ahead in Virginia. Some show that Obama still has a slight lead, but he's closing the gap in Nevada. We mentioned that earlier in the week. He's looking much better in Florida. And the only poll recently that suggests Obama still has a pretty healthy lead in a critical state is Ohio. It's a 6-point lead, but it also has a pretty massive advantage, I think plus 11 for Democrats in the poll. So you can take a little bit of a grain of salt with that. And even with that margin, the gap has narrowed. So, Jim, it's nice to be ahead in the national polls, but if you've remember anything from your high school civics class, you need to win the state polls too.
Yeah, that's the actually it was the Marist poll done for NBC News and Wall Street Journal this morning. It was actually yesterday. Survey USA had Obama only up by one in Ohio. So basically, you know, broadly speaking, just about every swing state has had at least two polls come out in the last day, and at least every one of them has Romney improved and in some places even ahead. When Rasmussen has Romney and Obama tied in New Hampshire, the Romney campaign will take that. My understanding is it's Larry Sabato is actually moving Florida into the leans Romney category now. You get on the list, you know, Virginia, NBC has Romney ahead by one. The poll done for CBS, New York Times, and Quinnipiac had Obama up by 5. Look, if Romney's down only by a few in Virginia at this point, that's fine. Hearing more confident things from Virginia Republicans, maybe they're, you know, a little too confident, but the movement in all these polls is very, very consistent. So it's nice to see it nationally, nice to see it in these really all-important states. Not there yet. I don't want any Republican to think that this is in the bag or anything. Even the ones that have Romney ahead nationally have him up, you know, 1 point, 2 points in most categories. So, you know, I think it's safe to say that Romney may have a lead, but it's a very small lead. Just one more poll to kind of throw into the pile that I think is kind of interesting. California, not a state most folks are going to think of as a swing state, and I would not persuade you that Romney is going to win this state. But you look back on how things were in 2008, and the McCain-Palin ticket just got crushed in that state. In the low 30s, the Obama campaign was up north of, I believe it was 62% or something like that. Actually, I think it was 64. So now Survey USA has a new one out, and that has Obama ahead 53-39. You're probably thinking, Jim, why are you celebrating that Obama's only up by 14 in California? It's because he's only up by 14 in California. He was up by, you know, close to 20 points. And if you have this kind of a 10-11 point swing in California, one, it kind of suggests that you'll be seeing big swings everywhere else, and that's always good news to hear. And secondly, you know, if let's just say it's something in the neighborhood of this Survey USA result on Election Day, that is 1.5 million more votes for Romney in California than there was for John McCain. And for a, you know, even though the popular vote does not decide things, I'm one of those guys who thinks that winning the popular vote is important for kind of the psychological effect, kind of important for establishing your mandate. And shaving 1.5 million votes out of the Obama pile in a very populist state is a very good thing for the Romney campaign. It makes it much easier to have that popular vote win and to make the argument that if Mitt Romney wins, he's got a serious, you know, broad mandate from voters from coast to coast.
Well, you've been suffering with the California government for the last several years. To see the same approach coming out of Washington in many ways is not all that encouraging. So I'm not surprised to see that move a little bit, but it is still a pretty deep blue state. But any progress is welcome. On to Martini number two now, Jim. And while things are looking better in a lot of these state-by-state races for Mitt Romney, although still a lot of work to be done, the effort to take over the Senate, which seemed to be a smaller hurdle to climb than the obviously much bigger mountain that the Republicans tried to climb in 2010 when they still picked up 6 seats. Now they need to pick up 3 if the presidential ticket wins. They need to pick up 4 if it doesn't. And that didn't seem to be that hard, but now all of a sudden it's not looking good for George Allen in Virginia. It's not looking good for Connie Mack IV in Florida. Somehow North Dakota is now basically neck and neck. Missouri is obviously a state that's gone from a great opportunity for Republicans to uphill at best. And some of these other pickup opportunities, Wisconsin is looking very much like a tight race. And even Montana, we're ahead, but not creating much separation. So as many chances as we have out there, a lot of them don't seem to be materialized in the way we'd like to, at least at this point.
Yeah, and it's kind of surprising. You think that with a Romney surge right now, that there'd be kind of a coattail effect and the Republican Senate candidates would be doing better. Tim Kaine and George Allen in Virginia, this one's probably going to be close. And I continue to marvel at how many George Allen signs I'm seeing in my otherwise deep blue neck of the woods in Northern Virginia. But, you know, still polling has not seen Allen put together any type of a lead, and in quite a few of them he's trailing. Ohio remains stubborn. Florida is a serious disappointment. Connie Mack, really, not only is he not winning, or you know, it's not that close in most of these polls. You know, Bill Nelson really came across as a guy with kind of mediocre numbers heading into this, and Connie Mack just has not succeeded in you know, building any type of momentum there. Between George Allen and Tommy Thompson, you start wondering if maybe this was just a lousy cycle to be running a retread, because Thompson is trailing in Wisconsin, not by a ton. He's still, you know, Tammy Baldwin certainly doesn't seem like a shoe-in in that state, but a state that looked very promising for Republicans is, you know, not where they want it to be. Heller is pretty consistently ahead by about 3 percentage points in Nevada, but I keep hearing from John Ralston and other folks out there that Democrats have been running up a huge advantage in voter registration. But we will see how that plays out. One exception to this, worth noting that Susquehanna in Pennsylvania has the incumbent Senator Casey only ahead by 2 by Tom Smith. So Pennsylvania is one of those states you had not expected to look good. We also might throw in Connecticut, mm-hmm. where Linda McMahon, in a very well-funded campaign, keeping it close against Chris Murphy, considered to be a very weak candidate for the Democrats up there. So it's not a terrible across-the-board situation, but considering how good things look earlier in the cycle, kind of disappointing for Republicans to be in this state. We'll have to see if some of these candidates can pull it together and change these numbers in these last couple of weeks here.
Yeah, absolutely. And two others we thought were kind of going to be pretty easy winners, I think we'll probably still win, but they're tighter than they were. Jeff Flake out in Arizona and Richard Murdoch in Indiana. So on to Martini number three now, Jim. And yesterday we talked about how the House Oversight Committee was finally getting to the bottom, at least as much as possible, of the administration's complete fabrication of events when it came to Benghazi. And there were quite a few fireworks, if you followed that along yesterday. A lot of incensed members of Congress, a lot of ducking and dodging and refusing to use certain terms by different State Department personnel. But it's our crazy martini, so who better to occupy the spot than Debbie Wasserman Schultz of Florida, chairman of the Democratic National Committee, getting basically beat up here by Piers Morgan. If Piers Morgan isn't buying your explanation, you need to rework your explanation. Listen to this.
The really important horse that should be flogged is the behavior and the statements of those who are in positions of responsibility and we would assume knowledge. And it's pretty un-American.
The responsible
pretty un-American to be putting out completely false statements before you know the facts, isn't it?
Piers, it is not okay for you to be saying that the administration was putting out completely false statements. They put out information that they had at the time based on the intelligence they were given, and
it
then as
to
the days wore on
wrong.
And more, well, that doesn't mean it was false. Doesn't mean that it was deliberate. It means
if you put out, Piers, you put out a false statement, then it's false.
But you're suggesting
wrong.
That there was
it's both of those things.
Just because it was wrong doesn't mean it was false, Jim. And just because nobody could explain yesterday at the hearing who first gave that intelligence report about the video doesn't mean that they just made that up out of whole cloth. That doesn't mean that at all.
The fictional PR man and lobbyist creation of Chris Buckley, Nick Naylor, I think he has wrong does not mean false engraved on a throw pillow in his den. Kind of this wonderful slogan to live by. You know, periodically just look at Debbie Wasserman Schultz and kind of marvel that all the Democrats in the entire country, they ended up with her to run the Democratic National Committee. You know, Piers Morgan, I love it. What? You know, the incredulousness in his voice at that spin. You know, the one thing I've just got to say in you know, the molecule of defense you can make is that, sure, in the very initial hours after this attack on our consulate in Benghazi, you know, yeah, there's going to be a little bit of fog of war and something like that. But now we're hearing that there was no protest, which means at some point some sort of disinformation or misinformation got out there. And this administration clung to it for like 8 or 9 days. It's kind of jaw-dropping. This is what happens when Debbie Wasserman Schultz has to defend something that's indefensible. I guess she's the person you want, you know? She's the one who's always willing to take that toughest assignment and go out and defend the indefensible.
Well, and Joe Biden's got that assignment tonight. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Literally expecting a great tonight. Great debate tonight, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity.
Literally.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Friday for the next Three Martini Lunch.